you know, he did. He was a very powerful servant of His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. And I hope everyone here, almost everyone here, knows that he was the person responsible for developing the project, because this property was acquired during Srila Prabhupada's personal presence. Prabhupada came here, he preached, he established a Gurukul school. So he began. But for the last decades, it was his holiness Ramakrishna Goswami who really developed the project here, initiated many disciples and trained them very expertly. And they are continuing his mission, which is Srila Prabhupada's mission. So it's really on his behalf that I have this grave responsibility to offer second initiation to some of his disciples. But I'm sure that he will always guide them and inspire them and encourage them in their efforts. The relationship with the spiritual master is eternal. Doesn't depend on the physical body. So even after the spiritual master's disappearance or departure, he continues to guide the disciples and encourage them. They continue to serve him and follow his instructions. The body is immaterial in an ultimate sense. But the body is important because in the human form of life we can take to Krishna consciousness. And great souls walk on earth to give us the knowledge and encouragement we need to follow the process and go back to God. And when we follow the process successfully, when we follow it properly, then we are all united in the spiritual kingdom. And if some disciple doesn't finish in this lifetime, then the spiritual master will come back again. But Srila Prabhupada said, don't make the spiritual master come back. Finish in this life. So that is our challenge. It's possible. It's actually a simple process. And if we follow it, we can be completely successful in the present life. When the spiritual master is there, the servants are there to help us. So, on such occasion, the spiritual master generally speaks about the 10 offenses in the chanting of the holy name, because to get the benefit of the chanting, you should chant without offense. There are 10 listed in the Padma Purana, but I will focus on 3 of them. I'll read the list. I'll read the list so you have an idea, but I'll only comment briefly on 3 of them. I mentioned that Srimad Bhagavatam were spoken by Shukadeva Goswami in reply to King Pariksit's question, what is the duty of one who is about to die? And the immediate answer was that to become free from fear at the time of death, one should always hear about, chant about, and remember Lord Krishna. And then he says that the best way is to chant the holy name. So I'll read that verse and some of the purport. This is Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 1, text 11. Etam nirvijyamana nam ichatam aputo bhayam yoginam nirvijyamitam harinam anukirtanam. O King, constant chanting of the holy name of the Lord after the ways of the great authorities is the doubtless and fearless way of success for all, including those who are free from all material desires, those who are desirous of all material enjoyment, and also those who are self-satisfied by dint of transcendental knowledge. So, it has already been concluded by great authority that there is no need of further discussion. It's already been concluded. And this word, following the ways of great authorities, namanukirtanam, that means avoiding the ten senses. So, Srila Jiva Goswami instructs that chanting of the holy name of the Lord should be done loudly, and it should be performed offenselessly as well, as recommended in the Padma Purana. One can deliver himself from the effects of all sins by surrendering himself unto the Lord. One can deliver himself from all offenses at the feet of the Lord by taking shelter of his holy name. But one cannot protect himself if one commits an offense at the feet of the holy name of the Lord. Such offenses are mentioned in the Padma Purana as being 10 in number. The first offense is to vilify the great devotees who have preached about the glories of the holy name. That's sadhu ninda. And that's a very dangerous offense, because the sadhus or devotees are our greatest well-wishers. They give us the holy name. They help us to chant the holy name. They help us to be steady in our efforts in devotional service. So if we find fault with devotees, if we blaspheme devotees, we cut ourselves off from our best friends and greatest well-wishers. And the devotees who preach the holy name, who distribute the holy name, are very dear to the holy name. And so if we offend the servants of the holy name, who are dear to the holy name, and the holy name himself feels pain. It's just like if a person is walking in the hot sun barefoot, You can tolerate the scorching heat on his head. You can't bear the scorching heat under his feet. The common experience of anyone walks on a hot sand by the beach in the summer, or on the sidewalk, on the Pulikrama, the Marg. So, Krishna can tolerate offenses to himself, but he cannot bear offenses against the devotees who have taken shelter in his lotus feet. And therefore, if we commit offenses against the devotees, against the servants of the holy name, then the holy name will feel pain, and the holy name will withdraw from the offender. And the punishment, if you will, that Krishna, the holy name is Krishna, awards to offenders is for the benefit of the offenders as well. So they learn not to commit offenses. And so they don't commit offenses. So that we should be careful about that. And like they say, the best defense is a good offense. So the best defense against committing this offense and other offenses is positive. In other words, okay, we don't want to think ill of devotees, so we should appreciate devotees. If we appreciate devotees, then naturally we won't think ill of them. We should glorify devotees, and naturally we won't blaspheme them. We should serve devotees. So that's the positive approach, and that's really how we should fill our life, fill our consciousness, and fill our life. The second offense is to see the holy names of the Lord in terms of worldly distinction. Also said to consider the names of demigods such as Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva to be equal to or independent of the holy name of Lord Vishnu or Krishna. So there are people, they may chant Hare Krishna, but if they think that there are many gods and they're all equal, and Krishna is one of them, Rama is one of them, Shiva is one of them, Ganesha is one of them, that's an offense, and their chanting will not immediately bring the desired result. But the hope is that by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, especially in the association of pure devotees, they will become pure devotees. The third offense is to neglect the orders of the authorized acharyas or spiritual masters. Well, that's important. If one follows the orders of the spiritual master, he'll be pleased. And when he's pleased, Krishna is pleased. Yasya prasada, bhagavata prasada. And if one disobeys the orders of the spiritual master, then he will be displeased, and then Krishna will be too. Yasya prasada nadati prakalpa. So we should follow the orders, the basic instructions at the beginning here, chanting 16 rounds of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, following the ways of authorities without offense, and following regulated principle. But one must have faith. To follow the instructions, one must have faith. Otherwise, if one thinks that Krishna is just an ordinary human being, why would one follow him? Why would one follow his instructions in the Bhagavad Gita? One will just either interpret the instructions according to one's own ideas, or one will just neglect them. So one must have faith. That's the beginning. One must have faith. And then if one has faith, one will voluntarily follow the instructions. And that does make progress. The fourth is to vilify scriptures or Vedic knowledge. The fifth offense is to define the holy name of the Lord in terms of one's mundane calculation. The holy name of the Lord is identical with the Lord himself, and one should understand the holy name of the Lord to be non-different from him. The sixth offense is to interpret the holy name. The Lord is not imaginary, nor is his holy name. The seventh offense is to commit sins intentionally on the strength of the holy name. In the scriptures it is said that one can be liberated from the effects of all sinful actions simply by chanting the holy name of the Lord. One who takes advantage of this transcendental method and continues to commit sins on the expectation of neutralizing the effects of sins by chanting the holy name of the Lord is the greatest offender at the feet of the holy name. The eighth offense is to consider the holy name of the Lord and his chanting method to be equal to some material auspicious activity. In other words, one does ever do ritualistic performances to get some material result. So we shouldn't think the holy name is like that. Well, I'll chant of you somehow and brought you something and all that. A good grade on my exam, or a good job, or a good placement, or whatever. Of course, if one has those desires, it's good to chant. Because the verse says that even those who are full of material desires should chant the holy name for success. So they should chant. I'm not saying they shouldn't chant. But they'll get better results if they chant just for the sake of pleasing Krishna and purifying their consciousness. But still it's better that they chant even if they haven't cured themselves. The ninth offense is to instruct those who are not interested in chanting the holy name of the Lord about the transcendental nature of the holy name. If such instruction is imparted to an unwilling audience, the act is considered to be an offense at the feet of the holy name. The tenth offense is to become uninterested in the holy name of the Lord, even after hearing of the transcendental nature of the holy name. The effect of chanting the holy name of the Lord is perceived by the chanter as liberation from the conception of false egoism. False egoism is exhibited by thinking oneself to be the enjoyer of the world and thinking everything in the world is meant for the enjoyment of one's self only. The whole materialistic world is moving under such false egoism of I and mine. But the factual effect of chanting the holy name is to become free from such misconception. And when one does, one will chant with attention. Sometimes that injunction to chant with attention is linked to the temple fast. Although there's a word, pramada, that appears earlier in the list that means that it's the fast to be the temple of chant. So when we chant, we should chant with attention. Chanting isn't something we do while watching television, while tidying up the house, while driving to work or to shop. Chanting is something that we do without any distraction. So when we vow to chant 16 rounds daily, we mean 16 rounds with attention, with concentration, not something we do just for the sake of doing it. And it takes time, it takes 2 hours, but 2 hours isn't really a lot of time. We have time for so many other things. So when we chant our 16 rounds, we should chant in a place and at a time when there are no distractions or interruptions. Ideally, we chant at a stretch, but if we can't chant at a stretch, then whenever we do chant, it should be with focus. Srila Prabhupada described that when he was in Grihastha Ashram, he would chant 4 rounds before breakfast, 4 rounds before lunch, 4 rounds before dinner, and 4 rounds before sleep. And that way he was always sure to chant his 16 rounds. Because most people don't want to miss their meals. And if they know they have to chant their rounds before they eat, they'll chant their rounds. And most people don't want to miss their sleep. So if they think they have to finish their last rounds before they go to sleep, then they'll finish their rounds. So that way, he was sure to complete his 16 rounds. And 4 rounds at a time. Is practical. But if one can, it's ideal to chant early in the morning. Brahma Muhurta begins roughly an hour and a half before sunrise. And in the temple, devotees chant, well, there'll be Mangalarti from 4:30 to 5, and Vishuddha prayers, Tulsi Puja, Vaishnava, and say from 5:15 to 7, they'll chant their rounds in the temple together. It's nice to chant in front of the deities. It's nice to chant with other devotees who are focused. It's nice to chant in front of Tulsi Devi. But if, because one has children who have to go to school, or one has work in the morning, one can't chant all the rounds in the morning, then whatever one can. But one should get up early, take rest early, and chant as much as one can at a stretch in the morning and later. But somehow, one should chant 16 rounds. But when chanting the 16 rounds, nothing else. Nothing else. One devotee, so that devotees become very expert at using their left hands. So while their right hand is in their bead bag, they can tidy up around the house, they can type on the computer. They've been very expert with their left hand, so their work isn't hampered by having their right hand and their read bad. So you don't want that. Like what the Lord said, that at first he thought that that his chanting was getting in the way of his life. Now he thinks his life is getting in the way of his chanting. So you want to have that consciousness. So it's a very auspicious occasion. Very auspicious occasion. And everyone here today is fortunate to be in the presence of the deities, Shishi Radha Kala Chanji, Shri Kalyana Kala Deva Subhadra, Shishi Gauri Thai, the presence of Shiva Prabhupada, Shiva Tamakrishna Swami Maharaj. And for this momentous occasion in the lives of these devotees, a very momentous occasion, it's a very wonderful event to be accepted by the disciplic succession and ultimately to be accepted by the Lord. So it's such a dramatic event. This is the succession of the Lord after who knows how many lifetimes of wandering in the material universes, suffering in different species of life, sometimes with dogs and hogs and cats, sometimes with demigods, kings, princes, paupers, fish, amoebas, and then somehow he comes to the human form of life. And then in this human form, in this lifetime as a human being, you come in touch with devotees of Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrī Krishna Chaitanya, Radha Kala Chanti, and then they accept us. They accept us as one of theirs. And they promise to take us back to Godhead. And one is actually, in this process, one is actually leaving the material world. It might look like, well, they're just sitting in the temple room. We're all sitting in the temple room. There could be, I mean, not in this temple room, but there could be bugs in the temple room too. So what's the big thing? But although they're sitting in the temple room, they're actually, their souls, their hearts, their consciousness is being lifted out of the material world altogether. And they're being pulled or taken or dragged or carried. Let's just say carried. They are being taken back to Godhead. It's like when, you know, someone is taking a long cherished pilgrimage or trip, you know, everyone goes to the airport and says such a big thing. Of course here they're going but they're staying. Those types of farewells are mixed. It's a great event because they're going. You know, they're long cherished desire to visit the holy land is being fulfilled. But we miss them because we're being left behind. But they're leaving. But they're staying with us at the same time. But the fact that they're leaving, not leaving, they're on their way, it's very momentous, spectacular for so many lifetimes. receiving their first initiations, and call them forth to take their vows. And at the time of initiation, they receive a new name. So we request you all to bless them. So first we will call forth Bhakta Manoj.
Arriba!
So the first order, Srila Prabhupada's Vyasa Sana, where Srila Prabhupada Krishna Goswami is as well, and all four reasons.
Those of you standing near the door, if you can come in. There are a lot of people who want to come in.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.
how many rounds? And we don't force, we want to be voluntary. We just apply a little gentle pressure. And anything else you would like to say? Any other intentions you would like to announce?
Wendy.
Good. Okay. And of course, you always serve the devotees in this room. Your name is Madhava Lata Dasi. Our esteemed priest today is His Grace Narottama Nanda Das, who has been doing his service here for many years. When Srimati Maharishi Goswami Maharaj performed initiation. So this here is another reminder and part of the wonderful legacy of His Holiness has left for us. Would you like to say anything about the ceremony itself, or what would you? Okay. So Narottamananda Prabhu will light the sacrificial fire, and the new initiates will throw grains into the fire. Offering the grains into the fire is a token of their surrender, of offering themselves to the service of the Lord. It's also said that as the grains are consumed by the fire, so our sinful reactions are consumed by our surrender to Krishna, our service to Krishna, our chanting of the holy names of Krishna. And while the fire is burning, we recite different mantras to the cyclic succession, which we repeat responsively, and then after offering our surrender through the mantra, we offer the grains into the fire. Yes. Before beginning the fire ceremony, the initiates will do ashma. Do you want to lead them to the ashma?
I think all of them know the question, but as we have moved them through, generally we chant the mantra at the time of the initiation ceremony before we perform our ashram. The mantra is Om Apavitra Pavitrova Sarvavastam Kitopiva Yasmarit Pundarikaksham Savayam Vantara Suchiti Shri Vishnu Shri Vishnu Shri Vishnu. And this mantra means that in whatever condition we find ourselves, in whatever stage of life we may be, simply by remembering the holy name of Krishna and His lotus feet, everything will become auspicious. Now, to perform the ashram, we're taking an ashram spoon with our right hand, sprinkling onto our left hand, and then dropping that drop of water to the side, and holding the spoon with our left hand, sprinkling at the right hand, and then dropping. Then putting a spoonful into the right hand, and chanting, Om Narayana Namaha. Then wash your hand with another spoonful of water, just drop that. And another spoonful of the right hand. Om Madhavaya Namaha. Om Govindaya Namaha. And then we have some meditation mantra. Om Tat Vishnu. Our tradition, our Sampradaya, is known as the Sri Gaudiya Brahma Madhava Sampradaya, and Lord Brahma is our founding acharya for the tradition. We're chanting some mantras for the Sampradaya. So we'll repeat that twice. So if everyone can say that together with us, that would be very auspicious. So I'll begin, and I'll chant just three mantras here from Brahma Samhita, and then we can begin. Ishvara Parama Krishna, Sachin Ananda Vigraha,
everyone is meant to be initiated by a spiritual master. This is not just a last cue. So one day, it is our hope that every one of you should be sitting at a fire ceremony and taking your vows and be connected to Sri Prabhupada and his specific succession. And that was what I meant when I said that they're leaving, but not without you. You should also get on the boat and go back to that as well. This is for everyone. So, started a little earlier, everyone is meant to do this. I'm sure many of you are. So please repeat. And this is for everyone. The initiates are offering my grade that everyone can repeat.
Namaste.
Saraswati Deve.
Saraswati Deve.
Shalini.
Bhaktarupam,
Bhaktavataram,
Kanta,
Gloria Kanta,
Radha Kanta,
Radha Kanta,
Namos today,
Namos today,
Swaha.
Krishnaya,
Govindaya,
Govindaya,
shall say Swaha. And when I say Swaha, you all repeat Swaha. And then you gently place your bananas in the fire. Very carefully. Swaha. Thank you.